My thanks to Juan for inviting me and all of my colleagues, who I'm very thrilled to be on a panel with. I'm going to set my own timer, which implies a bad thing, but I'll do my best. I should first, I think, establish my own bona fides, and that will be the first of a five-part talk plus a teaser. I met Pask in 76 when I was introduced to him by Nicholas Negroponte, and Nicholas said, "Paul, this is Gordon Pask, writer and producer for the stage. Gordon, this is Paul Pangaro, an actor." And this was the beginning of my world changing. It establishes that I am interested in performance, and so the performative idea of cybernetics worked for me immediately. And of course, Gordon was an extraordinary performer in his own right in many, many ways, in many spheres. Later, Elizabeth Pask liked to tell the story that Gordon didn't quite know what he was doing, or what, not in that sense, but in the sense he didn't know what he was working in until he met Norbert Wiener. And at that point, Gordon realized that he had been and would always be doing cybernetics. And this origin story is similar to mine. It was when I met Pask that I realized what I would be doing. Part two. So I started following Gordon around, and I did that for a couple of decades. And his style was that of an experimentalist. He made things, and he saw what happened. He made conversations with individuals and with groups, and he saw what happened. He did this human to machine, machine to machine, famously, all performative, all interactive. One of the famous examples is Music Color that you've heard a lot about, which is this device where a musician would play, a microphone would listen, and the device would project lights on a scrim in a music hall. But this oversimplifies it in many ways. This was not simply a first order switch where if the player played bass, it was green and treble was yellow. That would be a reactive system. It was not just a first order loop in which perhaps it tried to be reasonably responsive and not overly responsive, but there was a second order loop. And the second order loop gave the machine a purpose. And its purpose was not to be bored, we can say. So you have two second order loops interacting, the human and the machine. Amazing. He then built teaching systems along these lines. It's fascinating to me that Music Color came first. I love that story. Then typing tutors and various other tracking tasks, and extrapolated into cognitive tasks, to learning, to knowing, and ultimately developed a theory called conversation theory, which had other contributors, but which I feel Pask was the center of. Along the way, he wrote some amazing pieces. This piece in the Yasha Reichart book on cybernetic serendipity, coming from this wonderful exhibition that you've also seen pictures of today, in which he talks about aesthetically potent environments. I love that phrase. In that book, he also, I believe, provides a theory of media, which I haven't seen better stated or more powerfully stated. And this was the man. Now, section three. Fast forward, today. What has happened since? Well, let's see. ARPANET, internet, web. The cost of computing going from astronomical to essentially zero, the difficulty in starting companies going from astronomical to 15-year-olds in their rooms. The problem is, I claim, that we are still in an age of the engineer as the designer of our experiences. We know that this was true 30 years ago. The engineers were coding, et cetera. Now designers are coding more, not enough in my opinion, but the engineer is still the designer. So I would like to see a transition in which the conversation is the designer. Now, if you're familiar with Warren McCullough and the redundancy of potential command, this is the idea that if you tell me something and I do something, you might say, I made the decision. No, what you told me made the decision. So I want the conversation as a designer in that sense. Why? Why do I want this? Section four. I want a stronger legacy from Norbert Wiener and the Macy meetings. I want to change this dire situation we're in which I wish I didn't want to volunteer, but I'm dying to volunteer to be in the army that Andy Pickering is talking about, of this new paradigm. I feel this is extremely important. It's important because the alternative is we will continue to live under the control, meant more strongly than cybernetics means it is regulation, under the control of Google, Facebook, Amazon, the usual suspects. What do I mean by that? Well, these are AI guys, right? This is where they come. This is computational science. This is engineering as designer of my experience. No thanks. Don't want that. Prefer an alternative. I want a situation in which the purpose can be negotiated. The purpose of a Google result is Google's purpose more than mine. And their purpose is, I think, in contradiction to what I'm interested in. Conversation as designer. In two senses, I want the engineer not to be in control. I want the conversation to be in control and the variety in that conversation in control. The variety in the sense of requisite variety, Ashby. Not just an engineering point of view, a possibility point of view, a user point of view, a product point of view, a commercial point of view, and everything. Social point of view, sustainability point of view, value-driven, as we heard about today. But also I'd like to understand the design process itself better. Because after all, you really can't design my experience. You, as a designer, might be able to help me design my own experience. That sounds better, doesn't it? So the designer is the meta-designer, and the user becomes the designer. Makes sense to me. Section 5. Where does this go? We've heard about courses in design. Tom Fisher spoke about it. Glanville has taught for many years. Others have taught about their interest in design. I've also had the privilege of teaching in design with Hugh Dubberly, a longtime colleague and a great design planner in San Francisco. We started for Terry Winograd, actually, at Stanford in his program there, designing a course and delivering a course that was about design and cybernetics. What does that mean? That means if you're designing, what is useful about cybernetics to know? First order? Fine. Requisite variety? Sure. Second order, no question. But then we get PASC in conversation, and then we get biocost and autopoiesis and a few other things. And I sit here saying that students come to me, it's like Christmas. Students come to me and they say, Paul, I took your course 2 years ago, and I'm still using that stuff every day. And I go, thank you. This is why I keep doing it. This is why I can't avoid doing it. So this is a way forward, in my view. This is a way forward to do something with cybernetics. To go from engineer as designer to conversation as designer, and to afford a different world. A world in which Google does some good stuff, but it's really more my world than their world. This would be my preference. So those are my five sections. Here's the teaser. What do we design? What should we make? What would be a good thing? Well, by some odd coincidence, tomorrow I'm launching a product which is the tiniest little opening of the door into what I would call conversation with content. It's a bit of PASC and a whole lot of JavaScript. But that's not enough. That's really trivial, really, in a way. So I keep complaining about Google. I would like the more important part of the loop that Google doesn't do. What does Google do? Google, you type in some keywords, which are kind of like questions, but not as good. And they give you results, which are kind of like answers, but not as good. That's half the loop. What about the other half? What about looking at those possible answers and making a better question? I got to do all that here. I'm not as good at it as I would like to be. I would like to invoke you in helping me be better at it, so that I can be better at it. But can I make a machine that helps me ask better questions? I believe the answer to that is yes. This would be a kind of fun palace of intent. So there's a reference earlier to fun palace, which is a piece of architecture which is completely reconfigurable. How about a search engine where we eliminate search and maybe engine, engineering metaphor, we don't want that either, right? A kind of design engine, a design world, forget engine. A fun palace of intent in which I can experience new intents in a conversational flow with a machine. if Pask in the 50s could create a conversation with a machine with a soldering iron, a bunch of wire, and some lights, we can't? That's embarrassing. I reject that. I don't sit calmly with that. Why am I interested in questions? Well, because answers are dead. Once you have the answer, it's dead on arrival, right? Because an answer is about the past. I'm of the now. I want an answer about what I want now. I don't always know why I want it, but I'm human. I have a need. I want it. I'm not satisfied. I want a better answer to my question. Now, once I get to that answer, I'm in the same problem. So I'm always looping and moving forward. But to have a question-asking machine is more like being alive, or maybe it can make me more alive. A petit mal of ideas, in which, much like this device where we dance and move, but it's in the cognitive domain, or better yet, in the living domain, in the acting domain. So this is what I wanted to say, five sections and a teaser. Thank you very much.